Hello, my name is Anne McElhinney.
And I'm Phil McElhinney.
Welcome to the Anne and Phil Scoop. It is week 57. Mm-hmm. That's 1 year and 1 month and 1 week since the 2 weeks to flatten the curve lockdown.
So 1 year and 5 weeks.
1 year and... Yes, that's another way to do it, but I actually kind of like the way I did it there. That's, yeah, all right.
1 year, 1 month, 1 week since the 2 week flatten the curve lockdown. Since and the government told us
yes,
we would have just 2 weeks and we'd everything would be open.
There you go. That's the last time I listened to the government. Not that I ever listened to them before.
No.
Anyway, we've been in Scottsdale. We've been in Louisiana and since the last podcast. Yes. And I did my my debut stand-up comedy routine 2 nights in a row.
Yes, and by all accounts, and I was there, you were the star of the show. There were some professional comedians there.
Indeed. I'm ready to take this on the road, by the way. Yeah.
But people definitely said that they were that you were the best. It was organized by the American Freedom Alliance, and they have just released a little video, a little clip of it, not with you, but with Katie Hopkins, who was sort of the star turned. So let's play a few seconds of that so people can get a kind of taster for that.
So there's difference between you and us, but the main difference between you and us is that you have freedom hardwired into your souls. You have something we don't have. If I cut you open, something in there, it's your constitution, it's your founding fathers, it's your First and Second Amendments, it's in you, it's hardwired into your sinews. When British people were compliantly being locked down and told to clap at the sky in support of our socialized healthcare service, and they did. My neighbors disgust me for doing that. There is something rebellious about Americans, and when you gather in states where you are free, you are still free. Florida, Texas, all of these places, South Dakota, opening up. Even here, look at you all. You are different to us in a way that really, really matters. And I so respect that about you.
Katie's hilarious. She's absolutely hilarious. We definitely need to get her back on the show again.
Yes.
And the other thing that happened, by the way, that when we were in Scottsdale, I wanted to mention, just a little funny little story, nice little story. So when I was a child, my parents had a B&B in Ireland, and a lovely older couple from America came and had their holidays there. And I was about 7, and they said, you know, we have a granddaughter.
They were
seven.
The Fitzpatricks, I believe.
Mm-hmm. And they said, we've got a granddaughter called Holly, and she could be your pen pal. And so she became my pen pal. And we wrote to each other for 2 or 3 years about our 7-year-old, 8-year-old, 9-year-old lives.
And I want to explain to people who are younger than 30, pen pals are things people used to have, where you've got a letter and a postage stamp and an envelope, and you wrote to someone in a different country.
Yeah.
And said hello.
And it was all very kind of, it was all very exciting because it was like on a whole other country and everything.
And the envelope would arrive with
the envelope would arrive. That's right. And her and this Holly, she wrote and she had this lovely grid pattern paper. I remember the paper really well because we didn't have fancy paper like that. Our paper just.
But anyway, you didn't hear from Holly Fitzpatrick.
I didn't hear from Holly.
That was 40 years ago.
So that was 40 years ago, and then. You know, time, 40, flash forward 40-something years, and the next thing, I'm on Fox News, being interviewed, I think, by Bill O'Reilly or someone like that, and Holly Fitzpatrick, someone writes to me and says, are you my old pen pal? And indeed, this is my old pen pal, and I have to say that when I was in Scottsdale in the last few days, I met Holly, who's now Holly Kanglia. And there's a lovely photograph of the two of us reunited.
And you got along like a house on fire.
Like a house on fire. And it just so happens she turns out to be a conservative. So there you go.
There you go.
So anyway, nice thing. Very nice. I thought it was a nice story.
So what else is on the show today?
Well, we have some more very surprising extracts from the Hunter Biden memoir, which I have now finished. And as I said, I read it so you wouldn't have to.
And one man in a boat, I called over to Hunter Biden's home on the Venice Canals to ask him the tough questions the mainstream media have refused to ask.
We're bringing video and pictures of all of that to you.
And I think we may have the first real world application of the new woke math.
Yes. And we also have the New York Times doing their usual miss of a big story on their way to trying to insult Trump voters. So, you know, it's quite fun. It's actually a really good example of that. And the LA Times suddenly understands why it's so difficult to pursue prosecutions and police shootings of civilians.
Yes. You know, they're really sympathetic and empathetic in an article. Is this strange new sympathy due to the identity of the victim and the colour of the victim?
Oh, we ponder.
We ponder.
And the Chinese economy is booming. Of course it is. And unfortunately, New York's economy is not booming, and we tell you why.
Yes.
And then the Vatican, this is a great story. The Vatican is having a conference, and we have some suggestions of other speakers that they could have. Yes. And we have a
Wait to hear the speakers they do have
in the Vatican. Well, virtually in the Vatican. It's a virtual conference. And we have a really great, simple, really simple recipe that is became a viral sensation on TikTok, and we're bringing it, our version of it, to you.
And we're going to be reading some of the lovely reviews we've had recently. So that's going to be...
Yes, but we're starting with Hunter Biden's book, Beautiful Things, which is kind of extraordinary. And one part of it, I mean, just to understand that this man, his present marriage is to a woman, Melissa, who he met and 7 days later married. And as he said, here's a piece from the book, the decision never felt rash or harebrained or reckless. It felt urgent. I felt like I'd been given a reprieve. He got married in Encino Chapel, by the way. Magda needs to know that. And here's another little piece. When we woke up the next morning, 7 days after we'd met, she turned to me and said softly, you know what? Let's get married.
And then he says, the decision was never rash or harebrained or reckless. It felt urgent. I felt like I'd been given a reprieve.
So the next extract from the book is particularly fabulous. It's just a little short piece, but it didn't age well. This is a piece that really, really doesn't age well. At the end of the book, he has an epilogue, which is a letter to his dead brother, Beau. And he talks about, the election and all of that, and talks about Trump being president. And he says, I never felt the ache of your absence more than the night our family stood on the stage together after Dad gave his victory speech as president-elect. He did it, Beau. He beat back a vile man with a vile mission, and he did it without lowering himself to the unprecedented depths reached by his opposition. And then we have this fabulous, I'm going to read a couple of these pieces. You'd think this would make me want to drink, but it's the furthest thing from my mind, whatever. Forget about that bit, actually. Here's the bit that I really want. I took solace in being attacked. So he's talking in the book about he gets attacked by Giuliani and all of these guys and Bannon and all that. I took solace in being attacked by such despicable opposition. When you're assaulted by people with the capacity to take away an infant suckling from his mother's breast and place him in a cage, well, I knew I was playing on the right side. I knew that if I could hold on and have the strength to ride out the attacks, justice would be done. It doesn't always happen that way, but it happened that way this time. So just to go back to that, the despicable opposition that he says, people with the capacity to take away an infant suckling from his mother's breast and place him in a cage. There's two things here. One is that the cages, and we're just going to have a look at some of the images of the Joe Biden cages full of children now.
The Obama Biden cages,
but the cages right now, because he's talking about how bad it was under Trump.
The original cages, the Trump cages, were built by Obama Biden.
Right, we'll look at those. Yeah. And then the new cages are, 3 and 4 and 5 and 6 and 7 times beyond capacity. Yeah. And apparently we're in a better situation. But the other ironic part of this particular thing about the ripping, what is it now? The capacity to take an infant suckling from his mother's breast and place him in a cage. I think the other thing that he seems to be very tone deaf about here, and I know I mentioned it last week, but I think I'll be mentioning it a lot, is this is the same Hunter Biden, the same President Joe Biden, who deny the existence of a child that he is the father of, that Joe Biden is the grandfather of. Both of them deny the existence of that child. So I don't think we'll be taking any kind of moral
parental
lessons from anyone like that. But off you go, Finn. Tell us about what happened with the boat. And I'll tell a little bit more about the book in a moment.
As you know, there's been a few interviews with Hunter, but none of them have really asked the hard questions of Mr. Biden. Like, who is the big guy in your emails? Did you cut Joe Biden, your father, in for 10%? Did you lie on your gun background check form? All these questions. And I felt it was time someone did that. He lives just over there, just literally down the road, in a swanky place on the canals. So yeah, I decided to go and ask him these questions. And of course, as you know, he lives on the canal. So let's have a look at me, first of all, trying to get answers at the door. Hello?
Hello?
I'm looking for Hunter.
We're looking for Mr. Biden. I'm here to ask him some questions. I'm a journalist. Who are you, sir?
I work with the Secret Service.
Okay.
Yeah, we're not going to be taking any questions.
Well, I'm not asking you questions. Okay. I want to ask Mr. Biden.
Well, he's not going to take any visitors today. He's not going to come down, so...
He's promoting a book at the moment.
I understand that.
Yeah, so
No, we're not going to hit this anymore.
Okay, that's fine.
We're just going to... You can stay here as long as you want, but we're not going to ask him any questions.
No, I'm good.
And we're
I'm
not
going
to touch anything, okay?
Okay, that's Thank fine. You. I understand right. that. Thank you very much.
All right, no problem.
All the best.
All right, take care.
He's there.
By the way, I think that Secret Service agent will be out of a job, or should be out of a job. First of all, you don't identify yourself as a Secret Service agent.
Because you're meant to be in secret.
Yes. Yeah. And also, by the fact that you're there, it sort of gives it away that the person you're protecting
is
close, and that's where they live. The second thing is, you don't tell me that Mr. Biden will not be coming down and answering questions, because that, again, that tells me he's there. So anyway, that I think that the Secret Service agents also shouldn't play interference for journalists, mm-hmm. Against journalists from the people they're protecting. You know, I'm not a threat to them, and I'm allowed to ask questions, but that's the way it was. So then I decided there's another way to ask questions that the Secret Service may not be able to interfere with. So let's have a look at what I'm doing now. So look, there we go. And let's let's go over to that video right now, and we'll go right the whole way through.
Hi, I'm Caleb McAleer from the My Son Hunter movie, mysonhunter.com. As you saw, I went to ask Hunter Biden some simple questions that need to be answered. He's written a biography, an autobiography, but no response, not allowed to ask questions. So now I'm gonna go out there and ask him in a very loud voice, simple questions like, Hunter, who is the big guy? You said in your emails you had to cut the big guy in for 10% of all your foreign dealings. Is the big guy Joe Biden, as Tony Bobulinski said, as one of your business partners says? People need to know this. Simple question, yes or no. Is the email genuine? I also want to ask him, Hunter, did you lie on your gun background check? That's a felony. A really big question is, Hunter, is that your signature? This is the receipt for the laptop that he handed in. He says he doesn't remember, but he'll know if that's his signature. So let's find out if the laptop is his. Come out, answer the questions, Hunter. Real questions, real journalism. Let's go.
Mr. Biden, just a few questions.
Hunter Biden, did you lie on your gun background check?
He's at the window.
Mr. Biden, I just saw you at the window there. Please come out, answer some questions. Did you use the Secret Service to go and retrieve your gun from a dumpster?
Should that not be investigated? Should you not answer questions on this? Do you think it's appropriate that the President of the United States got 10% of your earnings from foreign entities? We just want to know, is Joe Biden the big guy? Is Joe Biden the big guy? Is this your signature? Did you leave the laptop in to get fixed? Yes or no?
So there you are. He came to the window. His response was to close the curtains because he doesn't want to take questions. He's a Biden. He doesn't take awkward questions. But I'm going to keep asking those questions. And that's why we're making the movie, because this truth needs to get out there. And we can't make it without you. We need your help to tell the truth, get the truth out there. Please go to mysonhunter.com. If we hit $700,000, we're almost at $600,000 now. If we hit $700,000, we can start development. And there's going to be real questions asked that he cannot ignore. So please, go to mysonhunter.com. Let's get the truth out there. Big media, big tech, they're suppressing this story, but they can't suppress it forever with your help. Thanks. Bye.
So there, we didn't get any answers, but we did see Mr. Biden, as you say, hiding Biden, not willing to answer the questions. And I mean, by the way, these are not difficult questions for journalists to ask. And this is the type of journalism that just isn't done anymore. Mm-hmm. As we said last week, you know, we're immigrants doing the jobs American journalists just won't do anymore. These are fair questions. I'm going to be asking a lot more questions of Mr. Biden. I'm going to be asking it in very interesting ways and very traditional ways. And I'm not going to give it away. But by the way, that's why we're making the movie, because these questions need to be answered. They need to be asked first, by the way. So please go to mysonhunter.com, where we're very close. Yeah, we're progressing every week.
Yeah.
We're now almost at 600,000. Yeah, almost at 600,000 we've raised now. Once we get to 700,000, which we're 100,000 short of a really important target. Once we get to 700,000, we can start hiring actors.
Mm-hmm.
We can start booking venues. We can start hiring a production company. You know, really getting out there and
we know that'll be happening.
So yeah, but anyway, Hunter's had some very interesting news on in the the New York Times woke math is a bit dodgy.
Yeah, so we were, I mean, I don't think this is not necessarily the definition of woke math, but I'm wondering if it is maybe. So it's really weird. You can see on the screen right now, this is the New York Times bestseller list of books combined print and ebooks.
Non-fiction.
And you'll see there, nonfiction, you'll see there that number four is Hunter Biden's book. And, you know, it's kind of interesting actually because we know that he sold very few copies.
We're in week, about 10 days or 2 weeks in now. 2 weeks in now, and he sold 11,000 copies. Now, we know our book, the last time I looked, our book had sold 30,000 copies and it had a massive sale at the opening week. It went to number three in Amazon. It was sold out across all platforms. And number three in Amazon, by the way, his never went below number eight in Amazon, and it went there for a little while, and then it went 15, 45, 35, it's at a couple of hundred in Amazon now. It's like, it's not selling at all. But and in our first week, the New York Times did not put us in the bestsellers list.
Yes. As we made the point at the time, the New York Times bestseller list, they can't even, it's such a fake newspaper that they can't even do something like bestseller list. And this, we think, is quite curious how Hunter Biden is numbered four.
Well, as we discovered at the time, the New York Times bestseller list is a fake list from a fake newspaper compiled by fake journalists.
Mm-hmm.
Most people think that the New York Times bestseller list is a, you know,
raw number,
and of course that would make sense, right? Now, as I say, back in the day before computerized book selling, you can see what. So there's a committee. There's an actual committee that gets together every week and decides which book is going to be in the bestsellers list based on a few sample sales.
And we have this great idea that could simplify the life for them, like really simplify.
No, let me explain how it works. So the sample sales. So they've 30 bookshops, and they phone them up and say, how many did you sell? You know, what was your bestsellers last week? And they tell them, and then they extrapolate that. But also they give extra weight if it's sold in New York, then it's sold in Kansas, and all this. It's a work of art, really. But we have, go ahead.
So I have this like just brilliant, like kind of innovative idea that they could use, that the New York Times could use, where they could just go and just use the numbers of books sold. And then have the numbers be like the one with the most books sold be like number one, right?
Yep.
And the next down. But apparently that doesn't work for the New York Times, because if they did that, it would allow books that they don't like to suddenly do really well.
So
the only reason we ended up on the New York Times bestseller list and we were number 13 was because there was such an outcry the first week after the book came out, when it had done so well and had sold out everywhere, that it was like, you know, and I remember the publisher saying, you're totally going to be in the New York Times bestseller list. And then we kind of all excited to look at the New York Times bestseller list, and we weren't there, and people complained and basically drew attention to the numbers of books we'd sold, and then they had to do it.
Yeah, let us be number 13
for one week,
and then they dropped
for a hot minute. But anyway, the other thing that we noticed, that I just noticed, and really amazing this, by the way, when you go on Amazon to look at the Hunter Biden book, and if, in my case, by the way, I had bought the Hunter Biden book, and I've read it, obviously, so you don't have to, but it's interesting, and I've never seen this before. I went to leave a review, and you can see right now what came up on the screen. It very, very interesting. So they make it really hard for you to leave a review. I actually thought I wasn't going to be able to, but here's basically what it said. Amazon has noticed unusual reviewing activity on this product. Due to this activity, we have limited this product to verified purchase reviews. And I'm thinking, well, by the way, I'm a verified purchaser. I bought it off Amazon. It's a Kindle thing. And yet this came up on my screen. And I had to really work very hard to find a way to leave a review. And I did leave a review, and they said it'll be published within a week, maybe. So I'll be watching to see if that happens. But can I just say that, I mean, people were writing, and I've looked at what people were writing about the Hunter Biden book, and they were saying things like the things I've been saying is, why are you lying about the fact that you have four daughters and saying that you have three daughters, which is the most hateful thing I've ever come across in a really long time to erase a child from history, a child who's out there in the world. And I think people were pointing that out, and then they started doing this, making it hard for people to read reviews. If you look at our book, by the way, and we have a lot of very, very positive reviews, we have horrible people who went on and gave us like one star and said we were horrible because they hated the fact that our book was drawing attention to abortion. And I just thought, we didn't get the protection that Hunter Biden is getting. And this is the kind of pattern that we're seeing all over the place. This is like Twitter not allowing the story from the New York Post to get out in the world. That's right. Either prior to the election. So anyway, this, you know, keep
Twitter's still at that. They banned James O'Keefe last week from being on Twitter because he exposed CNN, their mates in CNN, for, I mean, egregious anti-journalism. The thing that I really liked about the sting was the guy admitting that they knew that these Asian hate attacks, which, I don't think there's an increase in it, there's just an increase in criminality, but these Asian hate attacks, that the people who are doing them are mostly African-American. And I often thought, maybe journalists don't know that when they talk about the rise in white supremacy. Maybe they don't know. Maybe they look at the videos and they're so subsumed with the Asian hate attacks that they don't see the colour of the person. But they do see the colour of the person, but they decide to be part of journalistic malfeasance and misrepresent the colour of the person and make it out to be a white supremacist situation. Well, it's something much more nuanced and much more interesting, actually.
Yes,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
And then this is a great story from the New York Times. I just think it's really funny. It's one of those examples, and they're all over the place in the New York Times, by the way, where they rush to tell a story that they love, like so an anti-Trump story. And on the way to doing that, they kind of miss a really big story. Do you know what I mean? They bypass an amazingly big story that they're not telling. So here's what the New York Times, anyway, they have the dramatic headline, and this was sent out actually in their newsletter. The least vaccinated US counties in the United States, the least vaccinated counties have something in common. Everyone who's listening, by the way, knows exactly.
When you say least vaccinated, you mean COVID vaccinated.
Least COVID vaccinated counties in the United States are in the places where Trump got the most votes. At Times, and here's what they write in the New York Times, a Times analysis found that willingness to receive a vaccine and actual vaccination rates were both lower on average in counties where a majority of residents voted to re-elect Donald Trump as president in 2020. In more rural and more Republican areas, health officials said that vaccine supply was far exceeding demand. More than 127 million people in the US have received at least one dose of the COVID vaccine, and on and on and on. And then there's a chart here, and we'll put that chart. You can see that chart right now. And can I just draw attention to people looking at the chart here? So if you can see there to the right-hand side of people who voted for Trump, more than 30% of the people in Wyoming, you know, are reluctant to take a virus, to take the COVID vaccine. And on the Democrat side, they're all over it. They love it. Mm-hmm. There's very few people who are not taking the virus, who do not have any the vaccine, who are not hesitating. Yeah. And Phelan, I told Phelan this story, and Phelan pointed out a very, very interesting factoid that they seem to have missed altogether.
Well, let's put a different story up from a few years ago, actually. And, that headline will show that vaccinations have been declining in popularity. Children's vaccinations, right, have been declining, and there's a lot of anti-vaccine
sentiment out there. Right.
But anti-vaccine sentiment for children is focused almost, not exclusively, but heavily weighed in the most affluent parts of America, the liberal parts.
Here in California,
Northern California, the really liberal parts, and Monterey, and all those places, are huge anti-vaccination movements. And the children who are going to school not vaccinated, they're always the majority of them are the children of liberal parents, but those anti-vaxxers seem to have disappeared in this
with COVID,
right? Mm. So they're all taking the vaccine.
Mm.
That would be the implication from this graph, this new graph in the New York Times. So that would lead me to believe that the parents of these children are anti-vaccination for their children but not anti-vaccination for themselves. In other words, they're perfectly prepared
to risk the health of their children
in vaccination skepticism, but when it comes to, oh my God, I could die, they're going to take a vaccination. It's, now, this is not, I'm not...
And by the way, it's such an interesting
I'm not taking
a position.
A position in this.
You're just making a point. And I think it's a really good point. And it would make this story actually really interesting if they had, if they'd included that. Because it's more nuanced. It's like, yes, on this particular, in this particular time with COVID, with this particular vaccination, which obviously, you know, we all know was created, you know, at warp speed, fair enough, right? So people, I think on the conservative side, have a little bit of a problem with
and
that.
And some of the vaccines have been withdrawn and suspended. All that. But that would have been a great story. What happened to the anti-vaccination, liberal anti-vaccination movement?
Yes.
But they don't want to go there because maybe it means that the liberal anti-vaxxers are selfish virtue signalers who would use their own child's health to make a point, but they're not prepared to risk their own health. Now, or maybe there's something more deeper in
but
it.
But I think the simplicity of this story deserves further scrutiny.
Give it some further scrutiny.
Yes, I think
so. The LA Times, God help them, they've discovered that, you know what? It's Associated Press, but it was in the LA Times.
It's in the LA Times.
Yeah. Eric Tucker and Michael Balsamo, who sounds like a vinegar.
He may be from the Bal. He may well have a connection with the Balsamics.
His people, yeah.
Yeah.
So they ran a story. Federal prosecutors will not charge a police officer who shot and killed a woman as she climbed through the broken part of a door during, as they call it, the insurrection, which was basically...
This is the lady from San Diego.
I don't even think it went to the levels of a riot, but it was a sort of a glorified sit-in. But anyway, authorities had considered for months, I tell you, whether criminal charges were appropriate for the Capitol police officer who shot Ashley Babbitt, 35, an Air Force veteran from San Diego.
God help her.
Prosecutors said they'd reviewed video of the shooting, along with statements and physical evidence. Based on that investigation, officials determined there's insufficient evidence, right? No, video clips, this is what they say, video clips posted online depict Babbitt wearing a Stars and Stripes backpack. Why are you including that detail, by the way? Right? Stepping, and by the way, why haven't you included the video
In the report.
If this was a black person shot by a police officer, it would be click here to see the work, but there's no video here. Stepping up and beginning to climb through the waist-high opening made in a door when the gunshot is heard. She falls backward, right? Another video shows other unidentified people attempting to lift Babbitt up. If you'd looked at the video, she's trying to crawl through a hole up there. The guy shoots her through, you know, he's yards away. He shoots her through the door. She's on the other side of a door.
Yes.
Like, you know, it's not like, for example, that recent case of the young kid where the kid has a gun in his hand and has already fired a gun.
Mm-hmm.
This is a woman trying to climb through a hole in a door and she's shot in the neck on the other side of the door. But anyway, they are very, very empathetic and sympathetic to the Capitol police officer. And this is the final paragraph. The Justice Department does not bring criminal charges in most police shootings, as do not most most police departments don't either, in part because of the high burden for prosecution. Criminal charges were not expected in this case because videos of the shooting show Babbitt encroaching into a prohibited space.
So it's okay to shoot somebody who's trespassing.
Well,
shoot them dead, basically.
Why was your man Zimmerman then on trial? You know, so
I didn't know, by the way, that you. Anyway, yes.
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
And basing, this is the line I like, basing the prosecution on second-guessing the actions of an officer during the violent and chaotic day would have been a challenge. Well, every day for a cop in a city is violent, is very often violent and chaotic.
Yeah.
So why aren't you, Mr. Balsamic Vinegar,
and
Eric
Tucker,
why aren't you writing that for every contentious police shooting?
Yes.
Instead of race baiting and encouraging rioting. Not necessarily you guys, but this is what they do. They race bait and they encourage violence, claiming that an officer murdered someone. But when an officer murders a white Trump supporter, then, you know...
It's just a little chaotic and difficult to work out.
And it is, by the way. And, you know, I'm not saying that the officer should be charged with murder. But I'm saying journalists, it's not the standard of the Justice Department that I'm attacking here. It's the standard of journalism.
Yes, for not pointing out the contradiction here, the obvious hypocrisy here.
The lack of consistency. So China.
China.
China man. China man.
Yeah, this was just, this headline just struck me as kind of depressing. So, you know, this is in the Wall Street Journal. The Chinese economy grew more than 18%.
Ooh, everybody wants kung fu fighting.
That's okay, Phil. The Chinese economy grew 18% in the first quarter.
Those kicks are fast.
And there's loads and loads of information about what's happened in China. But basically, China's doing great. Thanks very much. And their recovery is magnificent. Thanks very much.
Of course it's doing great. They, you know, this is what happens when you destroy everyone else's economy and keep yours open. You know, and they destroyed the economy, you know, possibly, and we still don't know where the virus came from. And then they closed the Wuhan province off from the rest of their country, but allowed international flights to go to northern Italy and bring the virus.
And we should hear about that all the time, by the way. That should be repeated like ad nauseum. Instead of people talking about Trump not taking the virus very seriously, I think we should really take more seriously the fact that China knowingly allowed people from China, from Wuhan, travel all over the world, except for around China. You know, this is the sort of stuff that should be the headline news, but of course it isn't. But just, you know, in contrast to that, happy news for
this
China.
This story caught my eye because basically, you know, New York is screwed anyway. But restaurants are finally reopening in New York. Madness. Just as they're opening here in LA. You know, rest of America, believe it or not, we haven't had indoor restaurants for most of the last year. I know you're all out there eating and munching. We were just in Arizona. We've been to Florida. And it's just so weird to see people in restaurants.
It's kind of arresting. I mean, I said to you the other day when we were in Scottsdale, we were driving along and it was like, in the evening. And like, places packed with people, like just packed with people. And it's really funny. Normally, obviously, you know, in the before times, you wouldn't have mentioned it at all. But now you're like going, wow, look at that. Yeah.
So basically in New York, restaurants are having enormous problems reopening because of a shortage of workers.
Uh-huh.
It's the worst I've seen in my 7 years in New York, said Bernard Collins.
17 years.
17 years. In New York. Partner in the Upper East Side's Orsay, La Goulet and Bar Italia. I probably mispronounced the name of those restaurants.
Oh, and he blamed much of the labor shortfall on government assistance where people would rather stay home and pocket their cash.
So those out of work can receive $805 a week. $805 a week between New York State unemployment benefits and the federal pandemic unemployment compensation.
But wait, there's more.
I feel like the guy selling my pillow here, right?
Yeah.
And the recent stimulus, the previous stimulus, the money only went to adult children and adults. This stimulus is going to the younger children of families. So a family of four, there it is. The family of four, it's written there, can get $5,400 in stimulus bonuses. So so you get $800 a week dole money, and then then the family of four can get $5,000. I mean, people have more money, and I think, and I must check this, I think it's $900 a year in California. So this is why would you do that? Why would you go back to a real job earning probably that amount of money and have to work when you can get $800 or $900 a week and then get a little under the counter job for cash? You have more money than you'll ever need.
Well, by the way, can I just say that I'm not a conspiracy theorist. However, it is kind of extraordinary that what has just happened in the last, since this thing started, as we said, 1 year, 1 month, 1 week and whatever, one day or whatever ago, has resulted in what will turn out to be one of the biggest redistributions of wealth in modern history. I mean, it's kind of extraordinary that there is this incredible amount of money that has been redistributed in the name of COVID. And so, you know, one would be forgiven for suggesting perhaps that there's a lot of people who are very gleeful about that.
Well, you may not be a conspiracy theorist, but the reality is that this Chinese coronavirus crisis has led to the rise of China, has led to the shutting down of anything joyful and fun has led to the rise of socialized medicine and government-run medicine, has led to the rise of authoritarian governments with control over your workplace and your enjoyment and your socializing, and has led to this massive redistribution of wealth. In other words, this has led to the left's to-do list.
Yes.
Just so happens. This is what the left wanted to do, and wow, COVID has been the vehicle for it.
Yeah, so they're very happy about that. And obviously, as we see in so many places around the world as well as here, there's so many governments who are unwilling to call a halt, to say no, and to stop, including Ireland, by the way, which has the longest lockdown in Europe. And the Irish are so happy about that; they're just delighted themselves. Talking of Europe. Very, very fun and interesting story from the Vatican. So I'm just going to read this because I think, I think this is from something called Catholic News or Catholic Daily. I can't remember the name of it. Anthony Fauci, Chelsea Clinton and Deepak Chopra are among the featured speakers at a Vatican conference being held in May on the interplay of mind, body and soul in healthcare. Quick question to you, Phelan, before we get to my favourite part of the story. What has that got to do with the Vatican? I'll leave that one with you. The Vatican announced...
I thought you were going to ask me how's my interplay of mind, soul and body. And
I think we know the answer
to that. I
sniffed.
She sneered.
Yeah.
She sneered. She laughed.
Sneering,
it was a spontaneous laugh when I talk about the interplay of my mind, body and soul.
The Vatican announced the conference organised by the Pontifical Council...
Maybe I should go to the conference and get my interplay of mind, soul and body. Maybe Magda will stop laughing and maybe I'll just have confidence in myself.
The Vatican announced the conference organised by the Pontifical Council for Culture and the Cura Foundation April 15th. I'd like to have hoped that they would be busy might have something to do with religion.
Can I give the full name of the conference and try and...
Please.
It's called Exploring the Mind, Body and Soul, Magda, and How Innovation and Novel Delivery Systems Improve Public Health. In other words, socialized medicine, probably.
But I think what's really wonderful is that not only is Chelsea Clinton going to be speaking, but also Cindy Crawford and Joe Perry of Aerosmith. And I have really just got one...
Joe Perry of Aerosmith.
From Aerosmith. I just have one question that I think you probably all have as well. And my question is, why is Taylor Swift not speaking?
Yeah, we need to hear from
Taylor Swift. I, you know what? I'm never happy about climate change or any of those things until I've heard from Taylor Swift. So I think it's very remiss, by the way.
What about Greta Thunberg? She should speak. No conference is complete without Greta Thunberg.
No, so basically Taylor Swift's not speaking, which is extraordinary. But I also thought it was kind of interesting that they've chosen. I mean, this is possibly everything that's wrong with the Catholic Church. Deepak Chopra, and I just thought I'd go into a little of this. Deepak Chopra says he does not belong to any religion. He's not a Christian or a Buddhist or a Hindu. For that matter, he doesn't believe Christ was a Christian or that Buddha was a Buddhist. These are institutions we created later, he said. Mm-hmm. Chelsea Clinton says it would be un-Christian to oppose abortion. That's who Chelsea Clinton is. Here's something that she said. I find it quite insulting sometimes when people say to my mom and dad, that'd be Bill and Hillary, or me, that they question our faith. I was raised in a Methodist church and I left the Baptist church before my dad did because I didn't know why they were talking to me about abortion when I was six in Sunday school. By the way, can I just say when I read that, but you can talk to children who are six about their gender identity, you know, but talking to them about abortion, obviously, that's why she left the church. By the way, Cindy Crawford, obviously, who is going to weigh in this conference, said...
Cindy Crawford, she's the girl with the...
She is. She's the supermodel with the beauty spot.
Yeah.
I'm religious, but in my own personal way, I always say that I have a Cindy Crawford religion. It's my own. So these are the people that the Catholic Church are gathering together for this conference. And as I said, until we hear from Taylor Swift, I think the conference is useless. And I object strenuously.
I suppose it is day 2074 since we haven't found out who paid for Chelsea Clinton's wedding dress.
It is, yes, but we need to keep remembering that.
So I'd love to ask her that question. So there's an email. John Podesta said that the Clinton Foundation paid for your wedding. Is that correct, Chelsea?
Yeah. That's a great question. Hopefully you'll get a chance, Phil. Maybe you won't have
remember
to
that time.
Maybe you won't have to get into a kayak to ask her that question.
The last time I was in a room with Chelsea, I think that was before the... Remember we were in a room with Chelsea?
Well, we were at that play.
That's right.
In New York.
I could have went across now.
You could have told
me. That was before the wedding dress.
Thing. Before the wedding dress. So we have our recipe of the week, which is a really great recipe. This recipe was a TikTok sensation, and it's called 1 pan feta and cherry tomato pasta. There's also a New York Times version of it. I've kind of married all of these together and made my own version of it.
I can attest that it's...
You were really impressed, Phil.
It was a stunner.
It was a stunner. So
it
you
was
want
a
to
stunner.
Heat, you want to heat the oven to 400, which again, I always have that problem, Phil, I'm trying to do that. And then in a shallow casserole dish...
Point of information. You do not have a problem with heating our oven to 400.
I'm impatient.
You have a patience problem.
I have a patience problem. So in a shallow casserole dish, and I have just... We were very busy recently. We did a lot of travel and all of that, and we had my 2 nights of comedy. So I've done photographs here. So you're going to see these photographs rather than actually, there's a tiny bit of video, but mostly we're looking at photographs here. So here's the beautiful, beautiful tomatoes in this shallow casserole dish or gratin dish or baking dish. Combine the tomatoes, garlic, 5 cloves of garlic. You don't even have to crush it. Thyme, T-H-Y-M-E, rosemary, and 3/4 teaspoon of salt. And then toss all of that with about 1/4 cup of olive oil to coat. Put the feta in the middle. Now, what the recipe does call for a block of feta. I didn't have a block of feta, but I had feta in pieces that goes into salad that I got in Costco, of course.
What's a block of feta?
You know, it's a block, a solid block. Okay. So a solid block instead of the pieces that I had. But you basically put the feta in the middle and just put a little bit of olive oil on the top of the feta. And then
feta's
sprinkle.
Is it a Greek cheese?
It's a Greek cheese.
We were sprinkle. In a Greek restaurant last night.
We were.
What do you think of Greek food?
I thought food was very nice last night.
It was actually.
But we're still not over the fact that we had too much to eat.
Yeah.
Yes. And some of us maybe had too many glasses of wine as well. White burgundy. That's another story for another day. Sprinkle black pepper and red pepper flakes over everything and bake and then throw it into that oven for about 40 minutes until the garlic has softened, the tomatoes have burst their skins. And this is my game changer. By the way, this is my life hack that I'm giving to you for free that I just think is the game changer of game changers when it comes to pasta. Cook your pasta in the microwave. You get the timing absolutely perfect. Put the pasta in, cover it with cold water, and just put it in for whatever the package says you need. And in this case, go for the al dente timing. So in this case, I use penne 10 minutes to get it to al dente, then throw out the water, strain it into the sink. Then take your tomatoes, and you'll see I've taken them out of the oven now, and you'll see a little tiny bit of video that I did on my own, which means that the quality is not great. And squash those tomatoes. Just squash those tomatoes. Mm. Start squashing the feta and start incorporating everything together. You'll see, by the way, that the herbs are all very stringy there. You just pull them out once you're done. But anyway, throw in the pasta that's cooked. Put everything back into the oven for about 5, 6, 7 minutes, whatever you like yourself.
A preheated oven.
And the oven has never been turned off, right? So the oven was on all the time. Put that back in and then take it out of the oven. The one thing I did forget to do with this recipe, don't do what I forgot, you'll see the photograph there, is you should put about a 1/2 cup of basil, torn up fresh basil leaves, into your plate. And look at how beautiful that looks on the plate with the lovely glass of red wine. And we had that, and you were really impressed. Oh, and the other thing I should say is about three or four tablespoons of full fat cream goes into that sauce as well. And serve it, as I said, with the torn basil.
Oh, yeah.
It's really, really, really nice and really easy. So I would recommend it, highly recommend it.
So we're going to come to the end of our show now, but we thought we'd read some of the lovely reviews we've had recently. So please go to the Apple podcast and leave more reviews and rate us, because the more reviews you leave us, it makes
really
it easier
us.
For other people to find us. So if you like what you hear, please go there and leave the reviews. We have had a lot of reviews recently.
And if you have difficulty finding where to put the reviews, just ask a 12-year-old to help you, because it's actually really hard to find the place where the reviews are.
Or you can comment on the YouTube channel as well.
And you can do that.
We've got some lovely people commenting on the YouTube channel. So let's see. This is from Revisit on the Apple podcast app. And she or he has said, keen in on the issues of the day and the skewed way in which the media slants reporting, one can't help but to think for themselves if they haven't already. When Anne says, by the way, you can rest assured that a solid and clever observation will be presented on top of the already considerable merit of Phelan's careful gathering and processing of information at hand! ! I appreciate the casual levity. There's nothing casual about my levity. Maybe there is. I appreciate the casual levity and the genuineness
that Top Cat and Scaredy Cat add to the mix, because if I wanted to watch Mannequin news and commentary, I would, but I don't. And by the way, just for those who are asking, it's really funny. Top Cat's over there in a coma. There's no point talking to him.
He had a late night last night.
This is from somebody who calls themselves I Love My Husband. You can call yourself whatever you want when you write this. So this is somebody who says I love my husband. Never fail to touch your emotion and your palate. I never miss an episode. You are my best virtual friends, because you share your heart, your knowledge, your skills, and your ideas with me. I love you back. Isn't she just gorgeous? Thank you.
And then someone from BB Bots, and she said she burst out laughing when Anne described how the investigative journalism we do and the work we do because American journalism is so bad. And the phrase we used, you remember from last week, as immigrants, we're doing the job that American journalists just won't do anymore. He says, I burst out laughing when Anne said that. US is so blessed to have us. Keep digging and keep reporting and keep sharing recipes.
People do like the recipes. And this podcast, I'm good, this is the last one, but we have more than these, by the way.
And somebody it was from somebody called
The South Will Rise Again. This podcast is a must listen to. Anne and Phelan are genuine. Listening to them makes me feel like I'm sitting in the same room and having a friendly conversation. It's like they're sharing their day with you over a cup of coffee. A glass of wine, I'd add to that. But anyway, I look forward to each episode's release. I'm not alone when I tune in. Thank you, guys.
Well, thank you for all those wonderful reviews. Please go on the Apple Podcast app and leave your comments.
Please.
And if you think one of us interrupts the other too much, don't forget to add that. I know that's a
contentious issue. But some people have written and said that they actually have no problem at all with the interruptions. So
I don't know who they're talking about. I remember something about interruptions, but I can't remember who they were. Who they were targeting with that.
No idea. That's it for us. Okay. Don't forget to go to mysonhunter.com and give what you can. We're gonna make this happen, and it's important. This is an incredibly important story that needs to be told. It's unbelievable. And we're doing it because
it's the job
that immigrants...
The immigrants doing the job, Americans just won't do anymore.
That's us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.